What a great day this is. Been really blessed to be a part of the day and fellowship all of you good men, and do appreciate so much all the planning and work that has gone into this effort. I'm blessed to preach for the Gold Hill Road congregation in Fort Mill, South Carolina, where the Carolina Men's Day has been held for, I think, 15 years, if I remember correctly. The Charlotte Avenue congregation in Rock Hill actually plans the event, and it's held at our facility. And it's usually around 600 men, and some of you have been a part of that. I can foresee this being just that large one day. The quality of the lessons today have been superb. My wife and I spent the week polishing the pulpit, as was mentioned earlier. I think Keith mentioned it. You won't find any lessons better than what were presented here today. So we're blessed by this, very much so. One of the reasons we're blessed by this is my topic, communication. If there's no communication available to us today verbally, I can just stand here and look at you for about 20 minutes and you can try to surmise what I'm thinking. But unless I actually tell you what I'm thinking, tell you what I've studied, there's really no benefit that's going to be gained. I really think that our communication with each other and with others in our lives needs to receive more careful attention than maybe we give it. The story is told of a Mexican outlaw named Pedro Valdez. Long ago robbed banks and stagecoaches, and one day a Texas Ranger ambushed him and held a gun to his head. He said, "Pedro, tell me where the $4 million are that you stole from the bank in Juarez." Well, there was one problem. Pedro didn't speak any English. So he knew he was in trouble. The gun gave that away. But he wasn't really sure what he was being asked to do or what the situation was. And so the Texas Ranger saw a young boy watching the events, and he called him over and said, "Son, can you speak English?" He said, "Sí, señor." He said, "All right, give him a message for me. Tell Pedro if he does not tell me where he's hid the money, I will shoot him right now where he stands." And he cocked the pistol. Well, the boy tells Pedro this, accurately conveys the communication the Texas Ranger wanted him to. And Pedro said, "Oh no, I don't want to die. Please tell him for me that the money's buried 15 steps from the north wall at the old mission church in Laredo by the old oak tree." The ranger asked the boy, "What did he say?" The boy paused for a minute and thought for just a second. He said, "Pedro said he's not afraid of you and that he's ready to die." Well, he was a richer young boy than he was maybe before once he had that information. But that's what happens to our communication sometimes. Sometimes we're speaking with important people in our lives, and in reality we're speaking past one another. Or we're saying things that aren't helpful. The Bible has a whole lot to say about this. The task at hand for me is to spend a couple of minutes talking about a verse in Proverbs. Proverbs 25, verse 11, "A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver." Well, what's the definition of a fitly spoken word? Is it a word that is shared when one is having a fit? No. I love this definition by a man named Warren Berkeley. "A word fitly spoken is the right thing said at the right time, in the right place, to the right person, in the right way, and for the right purpose." That is a word fitly spoken. Now, we do communicate each day with a wide range of diverse people. Our wives, our children, our neighbors, our work associates, church members, random people throughout the day that you just happen to pass at a moment in time, maybe at the grocery store or getting some gas. With a desire that we all become more effective communicators, I'd like us to think about three questions that need to be asked. What is the setting for my communication? What is my motive or goal for this particular communication? And have I been successful in my communication? I really don't believe we can be effective communicators unless we at least subconsciously consider these questions. First of all, what is the setting for my communication? We make a huge mistake if we fail to consider this. All audiences are not the same. I've run into people who are rather gruff at times in my life, as you probably have, who make no apology for the way they come across to people and say, well, I'm the same way with everybody all the time. I just speak my mind. And that's one of the problems. Is they're not trying, even though truthful, to consider where are these words landing and upon whom? And what is the process that's being followed that hopefully is going to bring about something that's beneficial? For instance, you communicate with your wife in a very different way from how you communicate with others. I hope so. It's a different setting. You include words of intimacy. You might even read to her passages from the Song of Solomon. Your teeth, chapter 4, verse 2, are like a flock of shorn sheep, which have come up from the washing, every one which bears twins, and none is barren among them. Your lips are like a strand of scarlet, and your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind your veil are like a piece of pomegranate. Relax, I'm going to stop there. I don't know of anybody else on this earth that I would say those things to beside my wife. There's a proper setting for those kinds of words. Jesus had a different approach to the setting of the poor seekers who came to him for assistance than he had with the scribes and Pharisees who came to him with entrapment in mind. Now, he'd speak the truth in both settings, but he knew the settings were different. He always spoke truth with the ability to personalize it depending on the person and situation. One of the greatest things I think we can develop as men, and let's face it, this is not typically our strong suit. All we got to do is ask your wives. Ask my wife. We're not as good at it as they are, typically. But we need to learn to be better. And certainly with the kind of qualities we're talking about. We need to develop in our communication great versatility. Did Paul ever alter not the truth but his approach depending on his audience? Well, sure he did. To those with Jewish background, he appealed to the law. To those in Athens in Acts 17 who were secular, he appealed to God as creator and even quoted some of their poets. Before Roman officials, he took into account the judicial nature of the moment. While maybe not specifically in the context of communication, I think it's broader than that, but I think it includes it. You're familiar with the passage. In 1 Corinthians 9, beginning in verse 20, to the Jews, I became as a Jew, that I might win Jews. To those under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law, not being without law toward God, but under law to Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I've become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And this has to involve communication to a degree. It truly does. Now, from a preacher's perspective, I've tried over the years to remember that when I'm officiating at a wedding or a funeral, neither are occasions to preach my Sunday morning sermon. I'm not sure I've always followed that, but I've tried. Oh, there's somebody out there at this wedding. Well, I'm going to unload on them. I've been wanting them here. I heard a brother say, and I understand what he's saying. He said, I was present when he just really unloaded on everybody during the wedding. And the couples, poor couples sitting there, standing there kind of, okay, so what does this have to do with us at this moment? You know, we feel like we need to come forward after this sermon. Well, wait a minute, we're already forward. And I'll never forget the words he said. I questioned him about it because I was curious. I was a young preacher and I'm wanting to learn. And he said, well, there was a couple people here that I knew I may never have opportunity to preach to again if I didn't do it. I understand that motive, I do. But I truly believe he's probably right. Probably there wouldn't be another opportunity after, I think, the discourteous thing he did on that particular moment. And speaking of funerals at the death of loved ones, I started out in preaching thinking I needed to provide answers to people as to possibly why and give what must have seemed to them like pep talks in the face of the death of their loved one. I've learned that silence plus presence is an awesome combination. Don't explain what you don't have answers for. Maybe with the years we learn a little wisdom along those lines. I think really just being there and caring may be the wisest thing we could never say. And I think we need to sometimes be quiet and learn to be quiet. And that'd be helpful. Or secondly, what's the motive or goal of my communication? Are you seeking a behavioral response from someone? Are you breaking some difficult news? Are you just kindly passing the time? It's good to ask yourself that question. What's my goal here? What am I after? Sometimes we communicate with the goal in mind of drawing a conclusion that we have in mind. We do this with the gospel all the time. I want to communicate this, and I want you to respond to this. That's our goal. That's our motive, to get a response from someone to obey the gospel. I think of an example about this that is really wise if you think about it. In Exodus chapter 2, and beginning in verse 5, the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river. Her maidens walked along the riverside, and when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. So she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then his sister, who was watching the events, as you know, then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women that she may nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the maiden went and called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. Have you ever seen a more wise approach to communication than happens with Moses' sister here? She asked a question. Now, she had an outcome in mind. Pharaoh's daughter didn't know that. And I don't think it was deceptive. There was a need here that she asked the question for. But she gently moved into the moment, allowed Pharaoh's daughter to answer the question logically that she wanted her to answer. Now, we're not dismissing the providence of God in all this, of course, as Moses is saved and then leads his people. But sometimes the goal is dual, sharing one thing in order to share the next. In Acts 16, beginning verse 26, suddenly there was a great earthquake so that the foundations of the prison were shaken. And immediately all the doors were opened and everyone's chains were loosed. And the keeper of the prison, awaking from sleeping and seeing the prison doors open, supposing the prisoners had fled, drew his sword, was about to kill himself. But Paul called with a loud voice, saying, "Do yourself no harm, for we are all here." Then he called for a light, ran in, fell down trembling before Paul and Silas, and he brought them out and said, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" So they said, "Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and you will be saved in your house." Gospel was preached. They were converted to the Lord. But what's interesting about this to me is, and you've studied this many times, and it is in the text pretty clearly to be drawn from, but Paul was interested initially in saving a life so he could save a soul. It was something that needed to be done in proper order. Don't hurt yourself, please. And so when there was the beginning of a conversation towards safety of his body, now we can have a conversation of safety for the soul. I think we need to use wisdom sometimes when we're talking to other people. Is there an issue at work that we can deal with someone that may have a principle of morality attached to it, or simply being kind to them, assisting them in some way where they're hurting themselves? Then it's amazing how they're more receptive to the gospel itself. But that requires us to stop and think about what we're saying. Interesting to me, the passage that's kind of the hub of our thought is followed by one along this line. Remember Proverbs 25:11, "A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver." Have you ever noticed the next verse? Verse 12, "Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise rebuker to an obedient ear." The word "wise" there means intelligent, skillful, artful. Now, sometimes when we're trying to rebuke someone or correct someone, if we're not careful, it's something that we just feel we got to get off our chest. But if we do that, then that rebuking becomes more about us than more about the goal for which we are sharing this information, if we're not careful. The Bible speaks so powerfully of the value of skillful words of correction. Passage noted a moment ago, Galatians 6, 1 and 2. "If a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ." Ephesians 4, 29, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers." In our evangelistic efforts, I'm convinced that the goal of winning an argument is different than winning a soul. Now, we need to win arguments that are put forth with the Word of God, but that's not as far as it goes. We want to win the soul. With the former, we may feel satisfied with a proper beatdown that we've delivered. But in the latter, we may be dismayed if an eternal difference has not been made in the receiver of our words. Reminded of Ephesians 4:15, "Speaking the truth in love." Lastly, have I been successful in my communication? I'll be honest with you, I've not necessarily been skillful about any of these, but I really haven't always stopped to think about this last question. How did this work? You know what? If I keep failing in what I'm trying to do, you know what? Maybe I need to try something different. You know, maybe I need to take a survey that we're being asked to take about what was this day like. I need to give myself a survey. How did I do with this communication? Did I have the right motive? Did I have the right intent of heart? 1 Peter 4:11, "If anyone speaks, let him speak as the oracles of God. If anyone ministers, let him do it as with the ability which God supplies, that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belong the glory and dominion forever and ever." Well, as a preacher, I've always thought about this passage from a preaching perspective, and I think we rightly have pointed out, speaking as the oracles of God. But I got to tell you, it's more than that. As I studied this more, I realized that the word translated speak here is different than the word that's most often translated preach. And the context would indicate it has more to do, includes preaching, but in anything in life, are we speaking for God? Are we sharing for God what needs to be said? Have my words been truthful, in line with Scripture, in line with love and grace, delivered in the most clear, concise manner humanly possible? Has God been glorified? I cannot control the outcome, but I can control the outgo and what I'm putting forth for others to listen to. I think by asking and answering these three questions, our words will more often than not be like apples of gold in settings of silver. I thank you.